This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Five in the evening on Pop It with Lynn and Ayman, and we're talking about investing in tourist attractions that lie outside of, you know, the main cities or main areas that you might think of in a country. This idea kind of came to us after the Japanese government decided to create a law that's going to boost funding for tourism development around their country.
So under this planned law, the government will provide about 2 billion yen starting from April next year, and this is to subsidize projects that will improve transportation and also, you know, the cultural institutions outside the main cities, things like Tokyo, Osaka and Kyoto. And this funding will also be used to improve Wi-Fi access and multilingual services, as well as to improve the cashless payment facilities there.
So the Japanese government is hoping that this will boost tourism in regional areas and help to attract 40 million foreign visitors in 2020 and 60 million in 2030. And just off the top of my head, this is such a great idea because at least for me this year, looking at my friends' social media, everybody's been to Japan. Everybody. Like, at one point, it felt like everybody was in Japan at the same time. And so whenever they go, though, people do still tend to visit, I think, the same-ish places. The main cities, Tokyo, Osaka, Kyoto, I think Hokkaido. There are just certain cities that are really associated with Japanese tourism. And when you go there, it is incredibly easy to travel. The signs are multilingual. You can get money changes. You can get your money changed at the ATM. So it's just really, really simple. There's lots of stuff that's made easy for you. And then, of course, you make that assumption, you go to a smaller town, and it's just not the case. You know, it hasn't been provided in the same way.
And in a way, it can be like a cycle, right? Where the more tourists you have coming to that place, the more they invest in the local area,
yeah,
the more money you can then invest into improving the facilities there. So it becomes a cycle. And that means that other places that are maybe not so popular but still have something to offer, they miss out on these volumes of tourists that come in. So having the government sort of like put it in legislation, right, that, you know, we need to provide some kind of funding, subsidized development projects or development initiatives in these sort of peripheral areas, tourist attractions, that really does help in sort of like, you know, widening the scope of tourism in that country.
You know, I think it's actually also about identifying what those spots are, because it's not enough to say that the government should be giving infrastructure and all that, right? In the first place, like you said, popular spots kind of self-perpetuate. They're popular, then they stay popular, and so on and so forth. But you might live in a town with a small cave, and that small cave might have something that no other part of the country has. You know, maybe it has, I don't know, special formations. I'm not certain. Mm-hmm. But unless it is identified and built up as a tourist spot, then you're not going to be getting the dollars there anyway. So I think it's just clever to try and identify different places, but also to reduce the load on cities like Tokyo, like Kyoto. I remember reading an article recently about how Kyoto residents were saying that whenever they go to their market, the central market in the heart of their city, sometimes it's actually difficult for them to do the grocery shopping that they need to do because tourists are taking photos, clogging it up, moving slowly. And so I think that in order to preserve these cities, and cities in general, right, including us, in order to create the most pleasant travel environment and also not to overburden the infrastructure, is not a bad idea to diversify.
And yes, exactly. I'm also reminded of this story that I read a couple of years ago. There was this really remote attraction. It wasn't an attraction, but then it appeared in some kind of viral video or something like that. And then all of a sudden, like, tons of people went there and it just couldn't cope with the amount of people coming in. There were no sufficient parking spaces, no suitable places to, you know, deal with those people. And that ended up sort of like harming the environment there. So it is important to sort of like anticipate and at the same time sort of plan. If you want to make this place a popular attraction, then provide the kind of proper facilities for it. And the funding from the government does help, but at the same time, I do believe that, you know, sort of like private actors also need to chip in to help, you know, make those remote areas more vibrant for tourists to come in.
So do you think that this is something that we can learn from here? You know, the fact that the Japanese government is planning to enact a law that is going to boost funding for tourism development around the country, outside of the major cities, the usual suspects. And also, what would that look like? What are the unseen spots in our country that would really benefit from this? Let us know. You can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. So this being Popek, we obviously want to hear from you about this, and we took to the streets, and we started by asking if people traveled to learn about another country's culture, and it was an easy yes from everyone. So then we asked them which tourist attractions in Malaysia they visited and what the experience was like.
Terengganu. I think it's good because it's very historical.
I visited Terengganu because of their love for the art. They want to preserve heritage and culture, especially traditional art scene in the state.
Kampung Budaya from the Masakan in Kuching, that was life-changing, because I literally could like go to this mock houses, whatever, rumah panjang and whatnot, and learned about the culture and the tribe dynamic, you know. And it was not surfacey, because I don't know, like there's something that they did that's really that hit the right note in that project, I'm guessing. Yeah.
And when it comes to enjoying the best of Malaysia's local culture, here's what they said they would promote to tourists.
Food, mainly. While people know food in Malaysia are like nasi lemak, roti canai, but they don't know nasi kerabu and those kind of stuff.
Oh, everything. My hope is that for people to be, to care about all segments of the arts, all segments of the culture, not just dance or theatre or whatnot. It's also about, you know, literature, books, poetry, sajak, pantun.
More like, I don't know, kulit kepang, do batik stuff, like understand where you do batik and why is Terengganu one of the last surviving states that will still do this, and how that ties back to the fact that Kelantan, Terengganu and Kedah did not have to go through the British influence as hard as like other street settlement, and how they kind of preserve their heritage a little bit more. Yeah, so to me, those things are interesting.
I do wish people would take the time to appreciate more of our cultural costumes. I feel like a lot of what you see in the market, or a lot of what you see in media, are often the more modernized versions of that.
We also asked which country and culture they wanted to learn more about.
Spain, because of football. Because the football there is like God for them.
And also the east coast of the peninsula of Malaysia, so Kelantan and Terengganu, definitely want to learn more about them. Their narratives are not quite dominant in the normal Malaysian narrative. It's always focused
Sri Lankan, Nepali sort of culture, because I think that it is amongst the oldest culture in the world, and I would love to see pure Bharatanatyam or Odissi in a temple in India or something like that.
The Greek culture, because I'm a sucker for Greek mythology.
So we're talking today about traveling or investing, actually, the government investing in tourist spots outside the norm, right? Mm-hmm. To have people, I guess, look at different elements of the place they're traveling to, the country, actually deal with the culture or absorb the culture in a different way rather than just through the capital city. If you have thoughts on maybe hidden gems in Malaysia, or how you'd like to see this done, you can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us on the line now is Melissa Chan, director of the Bendahari, which is a sustainable creative hub that bridges foreigners, locals, designers and entrepreneurs with historical Melaka. Melissa, thank you so much for being on the show. So what did you think about the measures that Japan is planning to do in order to attract more tourists to their cultural destinations?
I think it's great. I think that the government saw what was happening on ground and they wanted to support and beef up their infrastructure. So I think that they saw the demand of foreigners that were coming in and where they were going to in the cities. So now they're developing ways to support the local community. So I think it's a great initiative.
And do museums in Malaysia receive support in any way from the government? And are there particular types of tourism that the government tends to focus on?
Government museums, I think, get more support in Malaysia in general. I think in Malacca, so far from what I've observed when I've been there, is that there tends to be a bit more emphasis on the area of entertainment tourism. So it's actually mainly because the people who are coming in, there's a desire for a few hours of, let's say, riding a trishaw that is very loud, or maybe a large concert where a pop star comes in, for instance. So there seems to be a little bit more support given to that kind of tourism at the moment on a state level. In terms of private museums, generally, it would either be from corporate support or it would be privately funded. I think there are some initiatives that are towards heritage tourism or cultural tourism, but I don't see it as pronounced. For instance, there was a river festival that was going on. So I think there were it was quite a large festival, and a lot of large pop stars were invited to come in and perform.
What would you say are some of the areas that are overlooked when it comes to promoting cultural tourism?
I think the area that is mainly overlooked is the gap of communication between a government initiative and a grassroots initiative. So let's say when you come into a city and you want to know what's going on from both levels, you would be able to at least look on a website and see everything that you you might be able to choose from, whether it is done by a government organization or it's done by a private organization. Of course, the larger cities like New York, you know, there's so many different portals, so many different places that you can go onto and you would know what's going on. In Malaysia, I find that is still missing if you go to different states of Malaysia.
So Japan seems to be tackling this from a federal level. So I'm wondering, what roles do state and federal each play in developing our cultural tourism?
I'm not sure exactly what the roles would be, but from what I observe is that the federal government would be looking at the overarching infrastructure, and they would be setting things like the laws of and direction. But I have seen, for instance, Penang, I think, was a case where they didn't wait for federal government to set any initiative, and they went ahead and they decided that heritage tourism was an area that they wanted to focus on in development of their economy. And I think they went ahead without waiting for federal government to come in. Also, I think the other thing is that every state actually knows what its unique selling point is and what its identity is. And I believe in places like Australia, they have an overarching direction for the tourism of their country. But then every state has its own initiatives and takes on what is unique to the community there as well. So I think federal can only play so much, but the state also has to really take on what they believe is unique to the state, so that when foreigners come in and visit, they get to play a part in the identity of that state.
Looking at the potential that Malaysia has, if we look at states beyond KL, Penang, Malacca, are there regions or destinations that you want to see developed?
Well, I definitely believe that Sabah and Sarawak has so much beauty, so much natural beauty. And even the smaller states in between all these larger destination places have unique identities as well, but it is, I think, for the locals to grow that, and maybe they might have studied overseas, or they might have studied in Kuala Lumpur, and now for them to go back, I believe that there is somebody who I was reading who went back to Pulau Ketam, for instance, and started a homestay there, and because he's a local, he knows the stories the best. So when you experience a place with the locals, it is a very different experience. So I think every space has its uniqueness.
Do you think we should try to emulate Japan's approach? How would you like to see support being given to boost cultural tourism in this country?
I think what I observe about Japan is that already from a grassroots level, a lot of the locals, in terms of businesses and heritage traits, they are very proud of their inherent identity to heritage businesses. I don't see that so much in smaller towns in Asia because they are unable to innovate. And I think that's been done very well in Japan. I'm not sure how much the government supported local businesses to do that. But I think if you ask me an area that I hope the government will support more, it would be in this area, which is capacity building and education as well, on how can heritage traits last from one generation to the next. And I'm working in this new space called the Bundahari that is the hope, which is to develop such platforms where people are able to learn or able to upscale from just a heritage trait to a heritage business that can survive to the 21st century and beyond as well. So that is, it's not, I feel, so much to let's look at how do we bring in more tourists, but it's how can we be more sustainable with the offerings that we have currently, and how can we then allow that to sustain for generations to come? Because if we don't do that and we don't address these issues, I think tourism would just become entertainment tourism or other forms of tourism that is very short-term value.
Melissa, thank you so much for weighing in. That was Melissa Chan, director of the Bundahari in Melaka, talking to us about this initiative that's come through from Japan. I mean, I say initiative, but actually it's an out-and-out law, right? Yeah. They're planning a law where the government is going to provide 2 billion yen to subsidize projects that are going to improve transportation and cultural institutions outside main cities. And that's in the hopes of boosting tourism. And it's a great idea, although, I mean, how would you like to see it translated here? Where are the places that you think it would really shine in? Call us and let us know. 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.